to A Taste of Anthropology. With me, Professor Burlingame. I am coming to you alive, large, and in charge, putting on a corset and a bustle to march to Union Square for women's rights. In today's podcast, I'd like to take some time to address something that I'm sure many of you have heard bandied about in the media. The patriarchy. It seems to be a popular subject of, and point of contention for, quite a few areas where social commentary can happen, from Hollywood movies to television shows to commercials to toys to social media posts to newscasts and news exposés. And while I think quite a few of these are sincerely meant and even well executed, I also think that many of them are predicated upon a fundamental misunderstanding of gender power structures, how they work, why they work, and the avenues humans have to become an effective agent for change in relation to supporting gender rights. So in this podcast, I'd like to give you 5 pieces of anthropology wisdom that are meant to expand and support your understanding of the patriarchy. My hope is that it will allow you to more critically engage in media representations of the patriarchy and more critically engage in the place it holds in your life. As with all of the anthropology I teach, I've made this podcast to help you use anthropology knowledge to improve your relationships with the people in your life, others, as well as yourself. So let's dive right in, shall we? The first anthropology thing you should know about patriarchy is patriarchies aren't the only gender power structure familiar to humans. Power structures are the ways human cultures collectively distribute power. Gender power structures are a part of these larger power structures, and anthropologists like me have been studying them for more than a century in cultures around the world and through time. Anthropologists have identified 3 general gender power structures: egalitarian, matriarchy, and patriarchy. An egalitarian gender power structure is one where the genders have equal access to power. This means that, regardless of wider gender definitions or gender expectations for people in the culture, all genders have equal power. A culture in the anthropological literature that is an example of an egalitarian gender power structure in action can be found in Richard B. Lee's ethnography, The Dobe Jutuanzi. If you read this ethnography, what you'll learn is that the Jutuanzi not only traditionally had an egalitarian gender power structure, but also an egalitarian power structure overall. These 2 things go hand in hand. A matriarchal gender power structure will not be found in an egalitarian culture. Matriarchies, like patriarchies, are only found in cultures with a stratified or hierarchical power structure. This means that some people in the culture have more power than others based upon traits that the wider culture deems worthy of more power. This also includes gender. Therefore, in a matriarchal gender power structure, women have more power overall than men and other genders. Activities, items, personality traits, roles, and behaviors that are understood to be feminine in a matriarchal culture are considered to be more important and are ranked higher than those things considered to be masculine. In matriarchies, men have power, but they do not have as much power as women do. A culture in the anthropological literature that is an example of a matriarchal culture can be found in Will Roscoe's ethnography, Zuni, Man-Woman. This leads me to patriarchies. Like matriarchies, patriarchies are found in stratified or hierarchical cultures, where different people have more or less access to power than others based upon identified traits, like gender. In a patriarchal gender power structure, men have more power than women and other genders. Activities, items, personality traits, roles, and behaviors that are understood in the general culture to be masculine are considered to be more important and are ranked higher than those same things considered to be feminine. In patriarchies, women have power, but they do not have as much power as men. I'm going to assume that if you're listening to this podcast, you yourself come from a patriarchal culture, but if you'd like to see a patriarchal culture in the anthropological literature, then read Emily Martin's The Woman in the Body. The second anthropology thing you should know about patriarchy is patriarchies are reinforced by the actions of those at the top and bottom of the gender hierarchy. I once had a student in an introduction to cultural anthropology class I was teaching here in NYC get very upset with me when I taught the class about gender power structure, and I stated that everyone in a culture, consciously or unconsciously, on purpose or not, helps to reinforce the gender power structure even when it is detrimental to them. Her argument was that women in America, an example of a patriarchal culture, have been fighting for equal rights since the turn of the last century, and so it was unfair to suggest that they were involved in reinforcing the patriarchy they were so diligently fighting against. While I completely understand this student's objections, and I admire her passion for the women's movement in America, I made it clear to her, and I'm going to make it clear to you here too, dear listener, that we humans can and do help reinforce the power structures into which we are all born and raised. Part of this may be because we're not aware of it in this way, since culture, of which gender power structures are a part, is presented to us as is when we are babies and children. So much of the process of being raised in cultural norms and expectations is done without question, and usually without much delving deeper into meaning or connections. This is true for all humans raised to be human in human cultures. None of us are exempt from this process. Women who have fought for gender rights in the past, and who fight today for them as well, are not necessarily reinforcing the patriarchy in that particular moment, but they, and all other women too, may be reinforcing it, without realizing it or fully knowing it, in other parts of their lives. Patriarchies are not men. Patriarchies are made up of all of the people, all of the genders, in a patriarchal culture. Everyone is responsible, although not everyone is equally responsible, and not everyone equally benefits or suffers from this reification process. If you truly want to make a positive difference in the lives of genders not at the top of the gender hierarchy in your culture, you're going to have to better understand the complex and interconnected nature of how humans interact in a human culture. And this may very well require you to learn about and accept some truths about humanity you may find challenging. The third anthropology thing you should know about patriarchy is patriarchies don't have to be run by men to be patriarchies. One of the misconceptions that people have about matriarchies and patriarchies is that they must be headed by people of the appropriate gender for each. Women in matriarchies and men in patriarchies. And while it is generally true that this is what tends to happen with leadership roles found in these cultures, it isn't necessarily always so. There have been numerous women monarchs who have headed European patriarchies through the centuries, for instance. There were also numerous women who held the role of pharaoh among the patriarchal ancient Egyptians. While in both instances there were far more men to be found in these leadership positions, the fact that women held them too doesn't mean that they stopped being patriarchies under women leaders and turned back into patriarchies once men took on the role. How is this possible, you may well be asking? Well, again, it comes down to understanding the interconnected and complex realities of gender power in stratified gender power structures. A woman in the role of a leader in a patriarchy can still be involved in reinforcing the patriarchy. One example of how this can work in the anthropological record can be found in ancient Egypt. In 1479 BCE, a royal woman named Hatshepsut became pharaoh, but she was understood to be masculine in her role as pharaoh. She was, for instance, depicted in official likenesses wearing masculine clothing and with a beard, an Egyptian symbol not only of masculinity, but also of being a pharaoh. When archaeologists study her reign, they find that she was generally considered to be a good pharaoh, as pharaohs go, in her time, but some of the royal men who succeeded her as pharaoh tried to erase her reign from the history. They had her name removed from important buildings, her statues smashed and buried, and her name removed from some historical records, for instance. So, even despite the fact that Hatshepsut had helped to reinforce the masculine status quo in the patriarchy over which she had successfully been pharaoh by taking on masculine garb and a beard. Her power and accomplishments were still undermined later, in part because she had been a woman with masculine power. This, while it may happen, isn't necessarily very acceptable in a patriarchy at large. So, yes, patriarchies can be headed by a woman and still remain patriarchies that reinforce and preference the masculine over the feminine. It is also equally true that matriarchies can be headed by men that reinforce and preference the feminine over the masculine. Human cultures do not have to be simplistic to maintain their status quo. The fourth anthropology thing you should know about patriarchy is patriarchies are about supporting the masculine over the feminine. As a part of the definition for patriarchy that I gave you earlier in this podcast, you may have noticed that I stated that in patriarchies, activities, items, personality traits, roles, and behaviors that are understood in the general culture to be masculine are considered to be more important and ranked higher than those same things considered to be feminine. I want you to understand that the fact that the masculine is supported over the feminine does not mean that activities, items, personality traits, roles, and behaviors that are associated with the feminine in patriarchies are never, or can never, be supported, valued, or otherwise considered important. If there's one thing I hope you've learned from this podcast thus far, it's that human cultures are complex, and they don't always fit into nice, clean, simple, or obvious boxes. Patriarchies definitely preference the masculine as it is defined in the culture, but the feminine can also be celebrated. The caveat is that in patriarchies, the feminine tends to not be as celebrated or valued as the masculine because the hierarchy of this gender power structure is such that men and all things understood to be masculine are ranked above women and all things understood to be feminine. In the anthropology literature, you can see this very well described by Margaret Mead in her ethnography, Sex and Temperament, when she focuses on the patriarchal Chambuli people of Papua New Guinea, who she studied in the 1930s. Among the Chambuli, men were artists, and the culture overall greatly valued art as a profession and in its finished forms. Art among the Chambuli was associated with men and understood to be masculine. Chambuli women didn't produce art, but they were heavily involved in economic pursuits that provided for the culture at large. Among the Chambuli, therefore, bringing home the bacon, as it were, was associated with women and understood to be feminine. Even though the women provided for the culture as a whole with their economic pursuits, the art that men did was still considered more important. Feminine economic activities were valued, of course, because really, who wouldn't value something that fed, clothed, and sheltered you? But it wasn't valued as highly as masculine artistic activities. Now, in contrast, in the U.S., for example, masculine and feminine associations between art and economics are flipped, with art being understood to be feminine and economics being understood to be masculine. If you're an American and thought of this yourself as I was telling you about the Chambuli, I applaud you for being able to look and understand your culture's gender roles and gender power structure in a deep enough way to recognize a distinction. At the same time, though, I want to remind you that as universals, gender roles and gender power structures can and do change from culture to culture and through historic time. The fact that Americans may see these things differently today than the Chambuli did in the 1930s is interesting, but getting too caught up in this difference alone can make you miss the point. What Mead's research shows is how any patriarchy will value the masculine over the feminine, even if what one patriarchy associates with men and the masculine is different from what another patriarchy associates with men and the masculine. This highlights the diversity of human cultures, even when they share similarities, and it also provides even more insight into the complex and integrated nature of how patriarchies distribute power and influence among the genders. The fifth and final anthropology thing you should know about patriarchy is patriarchies are a part of culture and will change through time. Gender power structures, whether they're egalitarian, matriarchal, or patriarchal, are human universals. This means that they can change from culture to culture and through historic time. We can already see this at play with the various forms of gender power structures anthropologists have studied over the past century plus. The fact that gender power structures are not the same in how they distribute gender power, equally in egalitarian cultures, in favor of women in matriarchies, and in favor of men in patriarchies, helps to illustrate this. But differences can also be found among different cultures that share a gender power structure in common. All egalitarian, matriarchal, and patriarchal cultures do not function in exactly the same ways, as my example of the patriarchal Chambuli helps to illustrate. So, understanding the changing nature of universals is a key way for you to better grasp changes that can and will take place in your culture's gender power structure. Noticing that there have been changes in gender power over time in your culture should be seen as a given. Yes, of course things will change. Gender power structures are a human universal, and as such, they can and will change through time. Expecting, however, that the changes you're currently seeing in your culture's gender power structure are a definite promise for how gender power will be distributed in the future in your culture is not accurate. I know that people in industrialized cultures like the U.S. like to speculate and predict about the future based upon today, but being able to unfailingly know the future is not really a power that human beings have. No. Your human superpower is in your ability to influence your culture in both small and large ways today. The choices you make, the actions you take, the things you create are all a part of you helping to build tomorrow. There are no guarantees in this, but there is potential. So I encourage you to be involved in supporting gender power in a way that fits your values. Not so you can demand that everyone agree with you and only do the things the way you think they should be done, because, yeah, good luck with that. Human beings tend to be extremely stubborn. Rather, I want you to support gender power in a way that fits your values to help improve your life. Even very small and personal changes have the power to make profound difference in larger ways. I will caution you about something here, though. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that if you're listening to this podcast by an American anthropologist, you're probably familiar with broader American cultural trends. I want to caution you, therefore, to think carefully before you jump onto any superficial American-created bandwagon claiming to be about empowerment for women or girls. Calling out the ills of patriarchy, whether that's in the form of a social media post, television show, movie, book, song, etc., is nothing more nor less than surface-level activism. It's easy to point out problems, but true gender support requires action. If your values align with supporting the power and influence of women and girls in your culture's patriarchy, you're not going to do much by simply pointing out issues or by buying the creations of those who do, no matter how well-executed, entertaining, or celebrated. True gender power requires recognition of the integrated ways that patriarchies work culturally, and then doing things that directly support women and girls on a grassroots, everyday level, in spite of this. Even supporting the rights of just one woman or girl is worth far more than throwing your money and/or attention at what basically amounts to slogans. Humans do. This is our superpower. Humans doing things in like-minded groups consistently over time is what causes cultural change. Grand gestures do not. Keep this in mind if supporting gender rights is really something that is important to you. One of the most satisfying moments of my career as an anthropology educator happened when a very quiet student in one of my intro college classes told me at the end of a semester that she had learned a great deal in my class. She said she'd use the anthropology insight about patriarchy I taught her to better understand and deal with something that had been happening to her in her career. She concluded by saying that she had come into my class a child and was leaving it now an adult. Now, I had a full semester with her and her classmates, and you're listening to but a single podcast episode. Yet, even so, I hope that you will use the information I've given you here to make a similar amount of positive difference in your life. I hope you now have some of the insight and knowledge you need to be an agent for positive change in relation to the patriarchy. One of the mistakes I find Americans making when it comes to social commentary is believing and trusting that disagreement about a social topic, and then declaring winners and losers of that disagreement, is the full extent of what constitutes important social change. It isn't. Just as I cautioned you to be wary about jumping onto social bandwagons that simply point out issues and then offer slogans as solutions to complex cultural issues, I caution you to be wary about the bickering you involve yourself in when it comes to issues of gender power. This can be a distraction, and it can give you a false sense of actually having made a difference, especially if you win. Instead of focusing on winning, I encourage you to allow the 5 anthropology lessons from this podcast to be the impetus you need to be a practical and effective part of the positive gender rights change that happens in your world. Did you know that I work one-on-one with ambitious nerds like you to offer transformation through the wisdom of anthropology in my masterclass program? It's true. My private masterclasses are custom-made for you and your needs to help keep you accountable to your goals. They are conducted in an online environment that is challenging, enlightening, and enjoyable. So if you're looking for professional education support to help you improve in the areas of human life where I focus my work, your relationships, your health and wellness, or your intellectual development, then please feel free to head on over to the Masterclass tab on my website to learn more. tasteofanthropology.yolasite.com. You'll find a link there to book a free 20-minute call to discuss your Masterclass possibilities. I look forward to hearing from you. And please, feel free to share and support this podcast if you liked it and found it useful. It's been my pleasure to bring it to you. Until next time. Goodbye, and take care.